Good morning. Welcome. As you know, the House, they may, if things are a little slow on their side, they may come over here and we'll certainly welcome them here. Let me start by saying we continue to keep our focus on things that are going to move Iowa forward. We think this session's about putting Iowans back to work. We think one of the most critical elements of that is to make sure we have an education system that meets the needs of the next generation of workers. So we have a plan to continue preschool in the state of Iowa. The Republican plan, with a $70 million plan that provides access to 326 school districts and kids in those school districts and about 20,000 kids in the state of Iowa. The Republican plan is to start a blog and hold an education summit several months after we adjourn. Their plan also cuts close to half out of the early childhood education efforts for four-year-old preschool programs in the state, reduce access to parents across the state, cost middle-class families more, and end up providing for fewer places in the state of Iowa where preschool programs exist. When it comes to the most basic part of our education system, the K-12 system, Republicans provide no new dollars to schools in the state of Iowa, 0% allowable growth. They'll lay off teachers, teachers' aides, they'll increase local property taxes, and their plan, again, is to start a blog, hold an education summit later, be the lowest we've been for allowable growth ever in the history of the allowable growth formula. And they're going to drop ongoing efforts to raise standards through the core curriculum program that we've been implementing in Iowa to try and improve outcomes for students. So that's the Republican plan. It's mostly about holding a blog and promise to have an education summit later this summer. We're going to put together real efforts to provide for the next generation of workers in the state of Iowa. By the way, all of this that the Republicans are doing is about setting aside enough money to do tax cuts for the wealthiest Iowans and for out-of-state corporations, a slush fund that's not even yet defined on how they're going to spend those dollars, but we all pretty much know they're going to be tax cuts for the richest Iowans in the hopes that maybe they'll create jobs. And they are so mean-spirited that they won't even include the working poor in tax cuts. Unbelievable.
I just want to visit a little bit about the community college funding. And I want to thank the Senate Education Appropriation Commission Committee for adding $10 million. All Iowans love their community colleges. Very few know how they're funded. The local property tax support community colleges, 20¼ cents a thousand. It's been the same since 1967, never been changed. In my own school district, my property tax for my K-12 school last year went up 95 cents a thousand. And there isn't an Iowan that doesn't pay more for fire protection on their property tax bill than they pay more there than they do for community colleges. That local effort paid 30% of the cost the first 10 years. Now it pays 3-4%. And our fiscal bureau tells us that the students are paying 50% of the cost through tuition and fees. Over 100,000 students. And whether it's President Obama or every economic development group in Iowa and every other state, talk about your community colleges for training and providing the skilled workforce. And we don't seem to want to step up to the plate on that issue. And I haven't heard the new director that the governor appointed to head the department that the community college administration is under say one positive thing about increasing the funding for community college students. And so I think that they're not on track on what Iowa needs. You hear a lot from the Republicans about training or all this unemployment that the Democratic administration has caused. And now they want to talk about the minimum wage is ruining the Iowa wage system. I mean, it's ridiculous. And so whatever we can do under our watch to help this segment of post-high school and students, we got an open door policy by law. We accept every student to walk in the door that wants to get some training. And so I think that we're dropping the ball here. And it's, if we want to move this state forward and keep jobs in Iowa, we got to address this situation. Thank you.
Kevin, can I get you to address collective bargaining in the House? What's going to happen to that? How long is it going to go? Give me your assessment of where that is.
Don't know for sure. Obviously, the majority party controls the agenda.
Right.
We control the clock. But they have procedural moves that they may do to limit debate. Don't know what they've discussed or what their strategy is with regard to that. So absent that larger procedural cutoff, our intent is just to, in a very constructive way, debate the amendments that we have on the bill. And that's what we're doing. And we're back. We just started debate again.
Summarize your objections to the bill.
Well, globally, we believe it takes away rights from police officers and firefighters and teachers and corrections workers and troopers. Hard-fought rights that took decades to obtain, and they've got them now. We've had it since 1974 here in Iowa, and we're going to fight to protect those rights. We think that people do have a right to bargain in good faith at the negotiating table. Secondly, the issue is not just isolated here to Iowa. The House Republicans have chosen to move this very divisive bill at a time where we're having really a very large national conversation, Wisconsin kind of being the highlight of that. And if you're going to do that sort of debate, we as a minority party aren't just going to roll over and take it. We're going to stand up and fight. And if you're not going to be focusing on jobs and bread and butter issues that we think the House should be focused on, then we're going to have our voices be heard very, very loudly for those people who are being hurt by this legislation, and to say, get back on track. The House ship is off course. Okay, it's gone away into stormy waters. Get back on course, and that's kind of what we're doing right now. And until they do that, we're going to stay and fight.
How has what happened in Wisconsin yesterday, and it may have already happened this morning, it impacted the psyche of Wisconsin?
I think it's got us more motivated, more dug in, because it shows the length that these new Republican majorities around the country will go to target and hurt their political opponents, which is, I think, one of the primary motivations behind the bill, behind all these bills in all these states. Idaho just 2 days ago stripped teachers of their collective bargaining rights. And so it's not just Wisconsin and Indiana and Ohio. It's spreading around the country, and of course it's here in Iowa now. I will say that I think the effect that what the House Republicans are doing has awakened the sleeping giant and has energized our base in a way that has not occurred in several years. I don't know why they wanted to do that, but that's been the effect. So.
Why continue this debate? I mean, obviously, this bill has a pretty bleak future in the Senate side. I'm assuming Senator Gronsoy, you'll agree with that statement. Why continue this lengthy debate? What's the point?
Because it's important. And it's important to let people know. We want to let every police officer in the state know that the House Republicans don't want you to bargain for bulletproof vests. We want to let every firefighter know that they don't want to let you negotiate the table for your uniforms or your safety equipment. We want to let every trooper know that they don't want to let you negotiate for your weapon. We want to let every correction officer know that they don't want to let you negotiate for the color of uniform for those that are in a guard tower in the summertime. Okay? We want to let every teacher know that you can't negotiate over class size. But that's the intent of the bill, and that's where they're heading. And we want to let every Iowan know that supports our public collective bargaining system that the bill ends it. Okay? We're all just talk about the mystery free agent provision. It's there in the bill, deferred upon. It's still there, and it looks like they're going to keep it there. Okay? It ends our collective bargaining system, and we think that's wrongheaded, and we don't think that's where the majority of Iowans are.
So this is to send a message.
Absolutely. I mean, very strong message.
Senator Gronsoy, address the Senate in this whole issue.
I have not talked to one member of our labor committee that has any interest whatsoever in passing this bill. So there's not a single Democratic vote on the labor committee. It's incredibly unlikely that they will bring it out of committee.
And as majority leader of the Senate, you have decision-making power deciding what issues get debated.
I only have the decision-making power to the extent that my committees bring bills out. And this committee is not going to bring this bill out. This is a war on the middle class in Iowa. That's what it's about. And our committee's not going to bring it forward. That choice won't even be presented to me because our committee members know it's a war on the middle class. Bargaining laws in Iowa are not out of balance. I've said it before. If they are so out of balance, if employee unions are so advantaged, how in the world was it that the teachers union bargained themselves all the way up to 42nd in the country in teacher pay. Our laws are not out of balance. This is a manufactured crisis. The state budget has $900 million in it. It's a manufactured crisis to create a slush fund to cut taxes for the super wealthy and out-of-state corporations.
Senator, last week, I believe you said today, March 10th, was the deadline for the House to act on the unemployment extension bill, $14.5 million. Is that still the case? And
yes, that's our understanding that that is in fact the case. And we talked about it on Monday with people in the executive branch, encouraged them. They said they were looking at it. We've not heard anything yet.
Can I make a comment on that briefly?
Sure.
Something I neglected to say, this is one of the reasons we also are fighting very strongly on this bill. You have aid for the unemployed that the House Republicans are flushing down the toilet, okay? They're flushing it down the toilet because instead we want to focus on this bill to end collective bargaining. And what else did we do? Today, I was just informed they're going to ask for a chance for the Oversight Committee to meet this afternoon back in the lobbyist lounge while we're debating this bill to assign not one but two abortion bills to a subcommittee. Yesterday, quite large crowd at 8:30 in the morning gathered in the lobbyist lounge, about 50 people. Sheriffs had driven all over the state to come in. Police chiefs went in there to debate what? A bill that in Ways and Means Committee, the gun bill, to do away with our gun laws, our gun permitting system, that's so extreme the NRA is opposed to it, okay? And here we are in the ninth week of session, and what are we doing? What are we doing? One divisive issue after another, and it looks like there's no end in sight. And that was our fear at the beginning of the session. We really meant that when we say we'll work with you in a bipartisan way if we can focus on mainstream issues. We're not there. Like I said, the House ship is lost at sea, I think.
Senator Grossell, the Council of Bloods has kind of a vested interest in the abortion debate. What are you hearing from your constituents about the possibility of
I think I think an awful lot of people in Council Bluffs think it would be a mistake to open a new clinic in Council Bluffs.
Are they asking for legislative?
I think they're asking for anything they can do to help stop that.
And you're feeling how you vote, or what are you going to do?
We're going to see what the House produces, and we'll take that up when it gets here.
The labor bill, you can just not bring it up, but with the preschool bill, you have to do something for that program to continue in the sense of. Put money in or before the session ends, right?
Wrong. That's not actually right. The preschool program exists inside the school foundation program.
But
We will at the end of this session have something called the standings bill. That standings bill will have a number for the school foundation program. I'm not talking allowable growth here. We will have a global number, let's say, very round numbers, about $2.5 billion. But the language that creates the preschool program will continue to exist if we don't act.
Some compromise, whereas with the labor bill, you could just let it die. But on preschool, there has to be some number compromise, correct?
The number compromise is, in the end, on how many dollars we are going to provide in the school aid formula. And like I said, I think it's more like $2.6 billion, but just round numbers, let's call it $2.5 billion. Now, the governor can certainly say, I will veto any number bigger than X. You know, he could say, I will veto any number, I will veto out of the standings bill any number that exceeds, let's say, $2.4 billion. That would cut $100 million out of the system. But it doesn't erase the preschool program, and it does result directly in a property tax increase. Because it's the amount of state dollars that are going into the school aid formula, but the formula survives. The formula continues to survive. School districts have their expenses controlled. So technically, no, I believe we can not act and still have a preschool program. Now, if he lowers that number from 2.5 to 2.4 and says that's the only thing he'll sign, and we try three times and he vetoes it each time, at some point he can probably force us to do the 2.4 instead of the 2.5 number. but that doesn't erase the preschool program.
He can't line item veto.
Yes, he can line item veto numbers. And in the standings bill, we got money, standing appropriation for property tax credits, standing appropriation for this, standing appropriation for that, and one of them is a standing appropriation of round numbers, $2.5 billion for school aid, for the school foundation formula. It doesn't have sub numbers in it, and inside that $2.5 billion is $70 million for preschool. Nope, that there's no line item there. It's one big global number. And so he either has to veto the global number or in some way try to force us to act on his recommendations.
And even if he demanded a lower number, that wouldn't dictate that savings would come from preschool, right? It would actually have to come from the whole school foundation.
That's how it appears to me, that it's out of the whole formula and therefore probably end up being proportional.
And under that scenario, some schools then would likely probably drop their preschool programs because they wouldn't have the money to hire the teachers?
I think the statutory construct for preschool is still there.
Okay.
So I'm somewhat doubtful that they'd be able to just drop their preschool program. Obviously, if they were getting, pick a number, 3% less money, 4% less money, they would probably have to cut the program 4%. But I don't think that means they would wipe the program out. I think there's still some statutory expectation that preschool programs exist in this state, unless we choose to repeal them, which is highly unlikely.
The conference committee left today at 10:09. There was some feeling when they left that there might be some agreement that could be reached by sometime next week. Is that realistic?
We think they made great progress. The Republicans on the floor of the Senate this morning talked about their dislike for minimum wage, and I pointed out to them that their icon, Ronald Reagan, was strongly in favor of earned income tax credit. The House struck that out of their version. I think we'll now get Senate Republicans going over to House Republicans and saying, hey, you got to put that earned income tax credit back in. Hey guys, we all voted for that. We think it's a mistake to strike that. So we think we'll have the Republicans, well, maybe not. So
they say it's a better deal to do a 20% across the board income tax cut, even for the people who qualify for the EIC.
And that shows how little they understand about poor people in Iowa. They are just plain dead wrong. There are thousands of people in Iowa that don't have an income tax liability. They pay a whole bunch of other taxes, but they don't have an income tax liability. There's about 200,000 filers that have no income tax liability already. An across-the-board cut of a zero tax gets them nothing. And it shocks me they're that stupid.
Senator, are there members of your caucus who might have some reservations about Isaiah McGee, given the controversy that he's talking about?
Yep.